You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 24th of April 2017 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One here in London. I'm Andrew Muller. On today's show...
Dans 15 jours, devenir votre président.
In 2 weeks, I want to become your president. The president of all the people of France. The president of patriots against the threat of nationalists.
Emmanuel Macron wins the first round of France's presidential election and now faces a runoff against Marine Le Pen. Is this really Macron's to lose? My guests Marie Bion and Jonathan Fenby will be here to discuss that and what else we learned from yesterday's vote, including the startlingly poor showing by France's usually vigorous left and...
Je vous l'assure, l'extrémisme...
I assure you that extremism can only bring hardship and division to France. There is no choice but to vote against the far right. I will vote for Emmanuel Macron.
En faveur d'Emmanuel Macron.
The rapid uniting of all the defeated candidates against Le Pen, with one curious exception. We'll also look at what, if anything, can be learned by politicians currently campaigning here in Britain. That's all coming up on Midori House on Monocle 24 right now. So, welcome to Midori House. My guests today are Marie Bion, a UK correspondent for French media, and Jonathan Fenby, managing director of the China team at Trusted Sources and author of The History of Modern France, among other titles. Welcome both. And this evening, we will start with an extended look at yesterday's first round of voting in France's presidential election. As we will be discussing, it was an immensely unusual event in many respects, not the least of which, in the current context of global politics, is that the generally expected thing actually happened. The maverick centrist Emmanuel Macron finished first, and the far-right populist Marine Le Pen finished second. The pair will now contest a decisive showdown on May 7th. Marie, first of all, is this now Emmanuel Macron's presidency to lose?
It might be, but we should, I mean, French people should not feel like that, because it's true that he's the first one. He won the most votes yesterday. But, I mean, there's 9 other candidates that he have to take the votes of. And that's going to be basically a hard undertaking, because he doesn't have any experience. For some people, that's a good thing, but for some people, it's not a good thing. And he has everything to prove in the last 2 weeks. Yesterday, he did a move that wasn't very, well-liked by the French. He went to a brasserie in the center of Paris to celebrate his victory. And his victory speech sounded a lot like a real victory speech, a second-round victory speech. So he's showing somehow that he's confident about what's going to happen in 2 weeks' time. That might be because he wants to show that he trusts the French people to basically not to give in to extremism. But at the same time, that also looks like that he's almost sure to win, and French people don't like to be told what they have to do. Remember, François Fillon said a few times during the campaign, I'm going to be at a second round, as if, you know, democracy was just a small affair. He said a few days before the first round, it's not the media who decide what question to ask. I mean, he's shown a few times that he had some difficulties with understanding democracy. And Macron has to be sure to show that he understands democracy and that nothing is done because no vote had been cast yet for the second round.
Jonathan, Macron is in a strange position. As Murray points out, he is untested, certainly, in this role. He doesn't have any particular party structure beneath him, at least not yet. And opinion polls do put him an absolute street in front. With all the jokes that people have made about opinion polls in recent years, it would be quite the turn up if he lost it from here. Does he basically need to do and say as little as he possibly can until May the 7th?
That could be one tactic, which perhaps unfortunately for him, he won't be able to pursue, because all the spotlight is going to be on him, of course, from now on. But I think, to go back to your earlier question, this is his to lose. I mean, Le Pen, the mountain that she has to climb with at least a 60-40 gap with Macron against her, is, I think, far too much, given the fact that Fillon, who you played a tape from just now, the socialist Socialists and everybody else, except for Mélenchon, who's playing the rather, you know, dog in a manger role at the moment, they're all united against Macron, against Le Pen. But I think most interestingly, really, she's been losing volition, losing the wind in her sails all year. If you remember, at the beginning of the year, the polls, and they have been very reliable, the polls in France, put her around 28%. She ends up with 21%. And in the last 10 days or so of the election, she was very much talking to her base, talking about all kinds of issues, some of them historical, which appeal to the old hard right in France. And it's almost as if, I mean, she was, after the last presidential election in 2012, she was saying it wasn't 2017 that she was aiming at, but the election of 2022, when she reckons the Front will be the main party on the right. And it was almost as if in the run-up to the first round, she just wanted to be sure that her base would all turn out and vote for her and get her into the second round without expecting really to win then.
Marie, to declare an interest, I don't want this programme to be in the business of giving Marine Le Pen any ideas, at least not any good ones. But if she is looking ahead and at the next fortnight, what actually is a potentially profitable strategy for her? As Jonathan points out, in the last week or so before the election, we saw some absolutely overt appeals to the base, including flirting with some, I think it's fair to say, somewhat cranky interpretation of events that occurred in the 1940s. Does she double down on that, or does she have to think about ways to pick up voters who may be defecting from Fillon, even Mélenchon?
Well, that's going to be her first strategy. She's going to look at who she can take votes from, and she's going to look at Fillon, but it's not going to be that easy. There were some counts that was done, and the Fillon base might not go to the to Marine Le Pen for many reasons, and for very different reasons. Some basically would never cross to the extreme right, and for some, in a way, Marine Le Pen is not socially conservative enough for them. I mean, Sens Commun, which is the political arm of the Manif pour tous, which the demonstration group that was against gay marriage, they are now a political movement, which is called Sens Commun. They backed François Fillon very much. They decided not to basically give advice, basically. So they won't back Marine Le Pen. She's not socially conservative enough. And a lot of people left from the Front National to François Fillon because of that. So that's going to be hard for him. Of course, there's a Mélenchon's base to tackle as well. She's very, I mean, her economic program is quite left-leaning in a way, so she might have some ground to bite there. There's also the Dupont-Aignan, the Sovereignist candidate. He had a bit less than 5% of the votes. Most of them might be tempted by going to Marine Le Pen. The programme is almost the same, but what she has to do, and is already doing, so we're not giving her any ideas, is that she has to basically show or say that Emmanuel Macron is just same old, is the basically the same thing as François Hollande, is the candidate of François Hollande. She's been saying that for some time. And most importantly of all, and she's already saying that he's the candidate of the establishment. He's a former banker. And that's going to ring very loudly in a lot of people's ears.
Jonathan, even if Marine Le Pen does try to beat up on Emmanuel Macron as the establishment candidate, which I'm sure she will, we have reached an extraordinary pass in which neither of the two parties, which have dominated French politics for longer than most French people have been alive, have a candidate for president left in the race. Now, is that actually, and a lot of people have reached this interpretation, a rejection of the political status quo in the political establishment, or have we just seen a perfect storm of bizarre and unrelated factors? For example, the scandals plaguing Francois Fillon, who I'm sure a matter of 3 or 4 months ago thought he only had to turn up to win this, the implosion of support for the Socialist Party, which I do want to talk about a bit more, the weird surge by Mélenchon. Are we just looking at a monstrous aberration?
No, I think it's both the things that happened. There has been this perfect storm of unexpected events going through the campaign. I mean, this seemed to be an election that Fillon was bound, or whoever ran for the Republicans was bound to win. And then, of course, we had all the affairs with him. We've had Hollande's presidency, which is pretty universally despised and written off. You've had Mélenchon's emergence, as you say. You've had all that, but all that is happening in the context of a, if you like, the deterioration of the Fifth Republic and of French society and the French establishment, which has really been going on for me since the 1980s. So it began with François Mitterrand there undermining it. And increasingly, we've had presidents being elected, promising to put everything right, and then falling flat on their face in very short order. And then their main concern is, how can I get re-elected? Well, Hollande got such a state that he couldn't even try to do that. So I think that there has been this genuine decomposition of the Fifth Republic establishment, which then has been accentuated over the last 6 months by this series of events.
Murray, to further that thought, what is this a judgment on what we thought of as the French left? I mean, Mélenchon's surge was not unimpressive, given that it came from absolutely nowhere. The socialist presidency has of François Hollande has, as Jonathan pointed out, become just monstrously, bizarrely unpopular. I mean, literally polling approval ratings of single digits. But do we think perhaps of Macron's candidacy as the orthodox centre-left candidacy here? Is this actually a crisis for the French left, or have people just lined up behind a different candidate?
I don't think we can align the word orthodox with Emmanuel Macron because he's everything but orthodox, because he's playing on all the grounds. So he wants to tackle the right, he wants to tackle the left, and he wants to place himself firmly in the centre. So is it Macron's win, or is it the socialist loss, basically? Well, it's a bit of both, because the problem is, Macron is the reason why the Socialist Party is failing as well, because if Macron wasn't there, there's a chance that Manuel Valls, the former prime minister of François Hollande, would have been elected as the candidate of the Socialist Party. Because Benoît Hamon was very much on the left, and he was too close to François Mélenchon, to basically be his own man. So the socialists already had basically a hand tied behind their back. And Mélenchon was socialist then. In 2002, he was very much socialist, and he called to vote against Le Pen, which he's not doing now today. But basically, the left party used to be the party of hope. When François Mitterrand won, he was the one who's going to basically make the sun shine on France again. And then reality happened, basically. And then Chirac happened, the presidency of Chirac happened. And it's a bit like the Labour Party in the UK. It was too beautiful at some point. There was too much hope at some point, and reality happened. And so the socialists haven't been able to influx some kind of realistic hope again, because now what people want in France is something a bit more realistic. And what Marine Le Pen is offering is something very realistic, because for what people think they're seeing, basically, it looks very concrete. And Emmanuel Macron, because he hasn't been very precise in his program until the last few weeks of the campaign, it sounds like it's all possible, because he's not precise enough in a way. The Socialist Party had to be very precise in their program, because they were in power and they're a very established party. So they suffered from their lack of enthusiasm and from the fact that they had basically a role to play that they haven't been able to play.
Jonathan, what do you make so far of reaction across the rest of the EU? Judging by the markets, at least, there are almost audible sighs of relief at this point. But are we doing, and this was my concern after the similar response to the Dutch election, are we all being too happy, too pleased and too relieved that the xenophobic Yahoo candidate only came second?
Well, obviously, there has been the kind of relief rally on markets and with bond spreads today. And I was in Germany just the other day, and there'll be enormous relief in Berlin this and in other places. But I think what is easy to forget at the moment is that although I think Macron's, you know, a shoo-in to win the second round, if you add up the anti-establishment vote, what's called the populist vote, rightly or wrongly, that accounts for 47% of people who went to the polls yesterday. Now, we're going to have parliamentary elections in June. Macron could put together a centrist coalition. That's you can envisage.
He'll need to be quick, because that is one of the many peculiarities of this. Yeah. We may well end up with a president with no representation in the National Assembly.
Yes. I mean, he could do it. Le Pen can't put together a coalition that could back a government. So what you might have under a Macron presidency would be this cobbled together coalition of Social Democrats, Manuel Valls and so on, the centrists and the Liberal Republicans. You can envisage that, you can do the numbers for that, plus the En Marche people from Macron's own party. But you would then have, let's say, discounting the pure protest vote, let's say 40% of the electorate who was against that, but would have very, very little representation in Parliament. So the prognosis would be we're back to the old story of the establishment, Macron, whoever he chooses as prime minister, coalition government, him having to hold that together, and a lot of people out in the streets, led by not just Mélenchon, but by Le Pen, too. And that could be a pretty potent combination for a young and untried president to deal with.
Just a final thought on this before we move on, Murray. Looking at those divisions which Jonathan describes, what have you learnt as an actual French commentator on this French event about divisions within France? The statistic that stuck out at me in particular, and this, it does play into my own pet theory, which I will now shamelessly inject into conversation, that all modern conflict and all modern division is essentially between the city and the country. Marine Le Pen polled 5% in Paris.
Well, yes, that's not exactly surprising, is it? Because Paris is a very left-wing city, and the mayor...
But there's the repeat of the pattern we saw here in the EU referendum, where the parts of Britain that were most ardently anti-immigrant were the parts that had rarely seen any.
Yes, well, that's...
And vice versa.
That might be very possible. But what you have to remember that Marine Le Pen is a bit more than just an anti-immigration party now. The Front National was that 5 years ago, 10 years ago for sure, but today she's a bit more than that. So people are not just angry when they vote for Marine Le Pen. Now they believe somehow in her anti-European stance. They believe in her economic strategy as well, for the little she has. They believe in it because they think that, of course, the less immigration will mean more job for them, but that's not all there is to our program now.
Okay, we're going to take a short break now. You're listening to Midori House here with me, Andrew Muller, along with Marie Bion and Jonathan Fenby. Coming up next, staying in France and the refusal of the far-left candidate to join forces against the far-right candidate.
Hello, I'm Steve Bloomfield, and I want to tell you about an exciting event we've got coming up. On the 11th of May, we'll open the doors of Midori House here in London for a special episode of The Foreign Desk with a live audience. Up for discussion? The French election.
The problem is they've got to have somebody to vote for, and the choice will be between the National Front and a Conservative candidate. But this is where the implosion of the left really is, I think, the tragedy for France at the moment.
With an expert panel of guests, including journalist and author Jonathan Fenby and the AFP's London bureau chief Florence Biedermann, we'll ask not only what the election could mean for the future of France, but also for Europe in the age of rising populism.
She presents herself as a kind of Jeanne d'Arc in a way, you know, like a national heroine who defends the country. But in what she doesn't say, she eliminates so many things.
We'll have the results. We've got the panel. All we need now is you. If you'd like to be in the audience, head to monocle.com to get your tickets today. That's The Foreign Desk Live on Thursday, the 11th of May at 1900 with me, Steve Bloomfield.
You are back with Midori House, with me, Andrew Mullister, with me, Murray Bion and Jonathan Fenby. Now, after first-round results were declared last night in Paris, defeated candidates François Fillon and Benoît Hamon, along with the incumbent president François Hollande, lost little time in rallying around Emmanuel Macron, calling on their supporters, or in Hollande's case, his supporter, to give their votes to Macron in the greater cause of keeping Marine Le Pen out of the Élysée Palace. Conspicuous by his absence from this clamour of solidarity was the far left candidate, Jean-Luc Mélenchon. Murray, we were talking there earlier about the slight overlap between the programmes of Mélenchon and Le Pen, especially where the EU is concerned. Is it possible that Mélenchon harbours some furtive hope that you'll actually win?
That he would win?
That he hopes Marine Le Pen might win this thing?
Oh, that she would win? Oh, I'm not sure about that. He's an Eurosceptic for sure, and he has few things in common with her, but he's a man on the left, and I'm not exactly sure that their social framework would basically go along. He might be enough against what Macron stands for, not to say anything, not to do anything, and he might live happily enough under Marine Le Pen presidency. That's a possibility, but what we have to see that he has changed his track so much since 2002. I would just say briefly that in 2002 he was very much against Le Pen. He said you have to rally around Chirac, although it hurts me to say it, so that Marine Le Pen doesn't go to the Jean-Marie Le Pen is not elected. And then further along, he basically said less and less that Le Pen was the danger. And now today, he's not willing to say it. He wants to play the grand Democrat who doesn't own the votes that were cast for him yesterday. He wants to say it's the people's choice, and they're going to tell me what they want to do. And when they will have told me, I will let you know what they told me, which is a kind of a very populist move, I think. And of course, that's what put him in a fourth place. So we don't know. I think what his stand is going to be, you won't know what I'm thinking about Marine Le Pen.
Jonathan, is this part of it's a fairly universal phenomenon where the hard left is concerned, this absolute horror of being seen to compromise with anybody who might end up actually making a decision which people don't like. Is it that, or is there some peculiarly local thing going on here?
Well, I think Mélenchon he came up, obviously, from pretty low, around 10%, up to yesterday's figure. And he sees, as Mary was saying, I think he sees, you know, the wind in his sails. And he doesn't want to, either in reality or to be accused of becoming part of a comfortable consensus around Macron. He wants to stand out on his own. Of course, there are a lot of similarities between him and Le Pen over the EU, over attacking, quote, the occult powers of finance, i.e. Fillon, Macron's time at the Rothschild Bank, and the Neanderthal economic policies, which he and Le Pen adopt, and so on. So there's a lot of similarity there. But as Marie says, I think, you know, he's pretty confident that people will not accuse him of sympathising with Le Pen. In fact, he's got his own constituency, his own position. And really what he has to try to do is to hold on to that extra 8 points that he gained during the later stages of the election campaign and solidify that around him, just as Le Pen has to solidify her people around him. And this is, I think, all in the context of an absolutely, for me, certain Macron victory. And they're going to be on the outside attacking, you know, the walls of privilege and everything else for the next 5 years.
Final very quick thought on Mélenchon from you, Murray, because it does kind of tie into what we're about to talk about with Britain, where there's quite a similar cult of personality around the leader of the opposition here. What was it that attracted people to Mélenchon? Was it actually his ideas, or was it him? Was Mélenchon one of those personalities on which people could project their fantasies?
I do think it was him. He's a very bombastic persona. He's saying what he means, and that's something that people like. I mean, he's very rude, and French people like to be rude, I have to say. So that, I guess that won him a few votes. So yeah, I think it was Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the man, more than Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the politician.
Okay, well, finally tonight, here in the United Kingdom, we do have our own election to look forward to and or contemplate with resignation and dread on June 8th. Latest polling suggests a Conservative landslide and Labour rout of dimensions hitherto undreamt of, with numbers released today putting the Tories on course to be the dominant party in Wales, a result usually as likely. likely, for context, as the presidency of the United States being won by the communist candidate. But can any party competing here learn anything from France? Jonathan, can they?
Well, I think they can, first of all, learn the unpredictability of politics there. I mean, everything seems set here, just as if you'd asked me, you know, beginning of the end of last year, what was going to happen in France, I'd say we're going to have a Republican. It looked like Juppé at that point, and then it was going to be Fillon is going to win it. And, you know,
in fairness, if you described to me 2 years ago the current political landscape of the world, I'd have worried about you, Jonathan, and I would have.
Yeah, well, I know. you've very good cause to worry about me. I'll tell you things. You know, we think everything is set here. And I do think it's probably set for a big Conservative victory. But France shows you the unpredictability. I mean, mind you, presidential politics are still different from the kind of parliamentary
Indeed.
Politics which you have in this country. It also shows the way that candidates can, Mélenchon, we were just talking about, can kind of come almost from nowhere and suddenly latch on to either a few themes or put their personalities over. Myself, I don't see a Mélenchon. I don't see Corbyn turning into a Mélenchon in Britain. He just hasn't got the same kind of, if you like, appeal that, I mean, Mélenchon in that term is much more like Donald Trump, it must be said, than Jeremy Corbyn. And I don't see the Lib Dems doing a Macron.
Murray, do you see any analogy between what has become of the Socialist Party in France and what is becoming of Labour in this country? If the polls here do prove correct and Labour does get absolutely belted in the general election, are they at the same part of their kind of process, lifespan? There's a right word there which I will not come to me right now. Do both basically need to be destroyed before they can be rebuilt?
Oh, well, in terms of what the Socialist Party is going, I mean, it's very different from the Labour and the Socialists. I mean, the Labour, they have a leader which has to be the next Prime Minister if he's elected. But he's the leader of the opposition, he is. And in the Socialist Party, the leader of the party doesn't have to be necessarily the next president or the next candidate to the election. So that's very different. That means that people are elected their would be president, not the person they want to shape the Socialist Party. And I think that's fundamental here. Would people have a vote for Jeremy Corbyn if it was just for him to be prime minister? I'm not so sure. But he's the leader of the Labour Party now. So that's the big difference here. Does the Socialist Party have to be destroyed to be reborn? Can he be reborn, really, in the shape that he is? I'm not sure. And can the Labour, in its own shape, be reborn as well? I'm not sure. We might have to add a little particle like the new Labour or the new something or something like that to basically wash up what happened at some point if they want to really be reborn in a very effective way.
Jonathan, given that Murray has there raised the spectre of new Labour, are there lessons potentially for Labour from the day after the election onwards in the rise of Emmanuel Macron, which is about whom there is something reminiscent of Labour here in the late 90s, a sort of fairly muscular, assertive, you know, lefty centrist type?
Yeah, I mean, Macron is a Blairite character in a lot of ways, it must be said. But what is also interesting in France is that you've now got the kind of question of, is there going to be an SPD moment, a Limehouse moment for the socialists in France, where Manuel Valls and some other prominent socialists, particularly socialist bosses in the provinces of France, who've backed Macron in the first round against their own party candidates, will the logic of that lead them to actually set up a separate kind of social democrat party? Because the French Socialist Party has never gone through its social democratic moment as the Germans and the British under New Labour did. So there's a whole lot of thinking there. But I mean, the problem for the French Socialists is they're very proud of their heritage, Léon Blum, Jaurès, Mondès-France, etc., etc., and so on. But they find themselves in a position where they may be stuck at below 10% of the vote for a very long time to come.
Well, we have a great deal more French electioning stuff coming up in the next few weeks, as well as the election here. We will have ample further opportunity to discuss all of that. For now, Jonathan Fenby and Murray Bion, thank you very much for joining us here at Midori House. That is all we have time for on today's episode. It was produced by Bill Luti, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco, Anthea Longo and Fiametta Shazana. Our studio manager was Kieran Banerjee. There's more music next at 1900. It's Section D, our dedicated design programme, and I'll be back with more on the day's main stories on the Monocle Daily at 2200. Midori House returns at the same time tomorrow, 1800 London time. For now, I'm Andrew Miller. Thanks for listening.